How good does it get, SK?
Why not us, Troy?
Today, live from the Pinecrest Inn, it's The Smiley Show. So long, everybody.
This is The Smiley Show.
All right, we're down here in Florida. We got the Florida Swing just kicking off, and we have a great conversation for it with Justin Thomas today. Justin, of course, you've been out, back injuries, and dad back takes another victim. I know you're a father, sweet little girl Molly, but it's never fun to have to go get surgery. But why don't you just kind of walk us through what the last 4 or 5 months have been like for you? I know it's been challenging, but also probably been pretty okay to be home, you know?
Yeah, it's been a lot of emotions, a lot of feelings, a lot of time. It's kind of the best way I would describe it to people is in the beginning, it's like doing nothing sounds awesome until it's the only thing that you can do. Then it sucks, to be perfectly honest. But I mean, I definitely come to learn, obviously, the surgery is very important. I was very, you know, lucky to have a great surgeon and Dr. Qureshi, but it just was, the rehab is just as, if not more important than the, mm-hmm. than the surgery itself. So I took that very, very seriously. And you know, I basically was on the tail end of any timeline. You know, if something was 2 to 4 weeks, I would start at 4 weeks. If it was 4 to 6 weeks, I'd start at 6 weeks. So I know that in golf, you know, I can be competitive and hopefully win tournaments for another, you know, 12, 15 years. So the goal is to get this completely behind me and not have to worry about it anymore.
All right. So JT, I know you've bent down to pick up Molly out of the crib. Was there any correlation between this injury and a basic dad everyday injury, with whether it's getting her in and out of the car? Can we tie these things together at any point? Because I think I was going through some back problems right around the same time you were. And I'm like, hey, do I need to go under the knife too? Like, am I okay?
For the sake of our wives just giving us a hard time forever, I'm going to say no. I think it may have to do with the couple million golf shots that we've hit over our life.
So.
But yeah, I mean, I've told Jill being home more and obviously carrying Molly more. Like I've said to her a couple times this week, I'm like, I don't get how you do it. I'm like, no offense. It's like, I'm stronger than you are. But if I hold her for like 5 minutes, I'm like, y'all, mom strength is real.
And 100%.
Yeah, I'm not built for it apparently. But yeah, it's I'm not going to fully blame that, but I've definitely been working on my form as I pick her up now.
Okay, speaking of form, I have to ask you this. I know you've, you know, been rocking Molly in the middle of the night. I know she's much older now, but you know, in those early days when it's middle of the night, you're sitting there trying to bounce her to sleep. Have you ever been bouncing her and worked on your golf swing while doing it?
Not in the chair.
Stand up.
Yeah, it's kind of... Man, this is terrible. Yeah, she's like a little medicine ball. You can really load into your right side well.
I'm just curious if I'm the only one.
No, you're not. Unfortunately, she doesn't. Well, she does have a mirror, so I can get, if I go a little closer to her crib, I can kind of check my position as well.
Yeah, it's on plane.
I haven't gotten to that point yet, because I also would be in the monitor's view. So if I really would prefer if Joe would not catch me in the mirror
just
doing that.
Loading it. Here, yeah, get a little lag right here.
It's not a consistent thing, but I've definitely done it a time or two.
How cool has it been to be a dad, right? You know, I think perception is an incredible thing, especially for us as golfers and a professional athlete. You have to be selfish by nature.
Mm-hmm.
And I think once you have a child and you have more responsibilities outside of waking up every morning and working hard and finishing the day and recovering and doing it all over again, you have to fit this in the puzzle, and it has to be important to you. And I know it's important to you.
Yeah, it's obviously it's great. It's been harder than I thought it would be in the aspect of just the time. You definitely don't feel like you know you have enough to, that's not just me, it's everybody and planet Earth that's parents. You don't feel like you have enough time in the day, but you look around and, you know, whether it's, you know, I have some of my closest friends at home that have multiple kids, and I hate to give them credit, but I'm like, you know, you got, they're grinding, working, both parents working jobs, they got multiple kids and no help, and it's like, you know, everybody finds a way to figure it out. And I think that's the you know, the coolest thing about it is there's no, you know, I don't want to say right or wrong way, but mm-hmm. there's of how you go about it, you got to do what's best for you. But it definitely took a while for me I used to not be a morning workout person, but now I have to be in the sense of,
tell Charlie, you know, this all the time. I'm like, I've got to get work done in the morning if I'm going to be able to work out during the day. If you don't work out during the day and you go through a full day of work, for me, sometimes sitting at a desk doing office work, I feel so bad at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And it really wears me out of that nighttime routine. It's like, oh boy, back could go out at any second. Here it comes.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's like anything. You figure out how to make it work and you know, sooner rather than later. But I think all of us, we've spent our whole life of like time, everything is time management and getting the most out of our time. So that's just another thing that kind of adds to the puzzle and trying to be efficient. But the practice definitely becomes a lot more structured, I think, in the beginning of
it's a good thing, right?
Yeah, beginning of Molly's life, right? Yeah, like I would go out to the course and I'd go practice and I leave and I'm like, I don't even know what I just did, but I knew that I only had a certain window or felt like I did. Mm-hmm. And now I feel like I have to have a more of a plan, you know, when I'm going to the course versus like, all right, I'm just gonna go out and go home when it's dark, kind of like what, you know, when I first moved down here. But you know, everybody's going through the same stuff.
What about winning as a dad? You know, having Jill and Molly be there walking off the 18th green. I mean, I just get like teared up just thinking about that. So maybe one day it'll happen for me at like a member or a member guest and just have that moment. But for you, I mean,
I'm there, man. That'd be great.
Maybe, I mean, you just saw, I'm swinging pretty good.
Yeah,
now,
you are. But, you are.
How cool is that, right? Hilton Head, that was a incredible week. And that putt at the 18th, the thing would have gone in a thimble.
Yeah. Yeah. It's actually a funny story about that. So I explained, can I say on here? Is that okay?
Yes. Yes.
I can replace it with butt if I need to. So I explained the term of making a putt, that would have gone in a gnat's ass to
yes.
Jill and she didn't understand. And I don't know what, this was like a couple weeks before Hilton Head. And I was like, we were watching golf and like gone in the middle. And I said that, and she's like, I don't get it. And I'm like, well, you know, like how big is a gnat? Like really small. I'm like, so then how? She's like, yeah. I'm like, so that putt went so in the middle that would have gone in a gnat's ass. And she's like, okay, I get it. Literally, we're flying home from Hilton Head. This is a couple weeks later. It's like quiet. We're sitting there and Jill just hops up and she goes, that putt in the playoff would have gone in a gnat's ass. And I was like, yes, Jill. Yes, that is my wife right there. So funny story about that, but I will never forget that. That was a like a proud father. Like I, you know, I taught my wife something and she remembered.
My favorite Jill story is the one where she had a little boo-boo when we were climbing Camelback Mountain after a miscut in Phoenix. And she said, they don't call me Grace for nothing.
Yeah.
She's got tears running through her, down her eye.
Yeah.
Grace is her middle name. And of course, Molly's middle name, Grace as well. But yeah, back to winning on the 18th.
Yeah, it was very special. I think I remember in Tampa, I mean, I had a three-shot lead with three to go. And Victor, you know, birdie 16, 17. I bogey 16 and 18. And next thing you know, it's gone like that. But I remember walking up 18 and seeing Jill and Molly there. And like it hurt because I knew that without some luck, I probably wasn't going to win anymore. But also with them there, it just was kind of like, oh my gosh, you know, I felt like I had it. And so I tried to not look back behind the green for that reason, because it just, it not adds pressure, but just,
you want to
experience that. So it was great. I mean, you know, it's like we go back and look at baby pictures and it's just, they don't, you know, at this age, they don't even look the same.
It grew up so fast. It changed so
much.
But
it's, I mean, I'm obviously want to have so many more of those moments. Cause
I thought you were about to say kids.
No, not the moment.
I would have so many more kids.
Yeah.
Like, man,
full Cam Young just everywhere. No, but, it was great, man. It's cool because it obviously, to get to share the moment with your loved ones, your family. But it's also, it's great because they obviously, like, especially at that age, like, she didn't care. She didn't know. So it's like, I'm, you know, I'm waking up in the morning and, uh-huh. you know, doing going back to it.
We're back to the routine.
I'd probably prefer it that way than the other way, because it's, you know, it's on to the next one kind of thing.
Let me ask you this. Did it help or did it hurt rooming with Jordan and Ricky so much on the road over the last couple of years before you had Molly, seeing those dads in action and seeing how much work it was? Did it scare you at all, or did it make you more excited about having a kid of your own?
I mean, the idea of being a parent for the first time is, I think, pretty scary in itself. So I think that's...
I think anybody can relate to that.
Yeah, I think it was probably both. I mean, it was...
You're like, if Jordan can do it, I can do it, though.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's like a guy could lose his wallet three times in a week. So, like, and he's Sammy, and he was doing great at the time. So I'm like, I should be fine. But no, it is great. I think we were just, you know, between you guys and then the Fowlers and the Spies, like, we were just a little bit behind in the timeline of mm-hmm. the marriage and then having kids. So it was actually kind of nice, because Jill is able to use, you know, the wives for advice, and I'm able to use you guys as soundboards or just watch and do what you guys don't do what you guys do sometimes. So yeah, it's all good.
No, gosh, it's amazing. And I know your relationship with Jordan dates back to a very early age, similar to you and I. You know, I remember seeing you on the Greenville, Mississippi putting green back when we were like 12 years old. JT's wearing pants. I'm like, who is this kid? He must be a bit of a know-it-all, if you will, on here with this professional golfer junior event. But I want to ask, what was your first memory of meeting Jordan Spieth? Did you know him? And the first round that y'all played together?
The first time we met was an AJGA at Walnut Creek, actually. It was like a junior.
We played the same one.
Junior All-Star, I think it was.
I played with Jordan that first round, and I will never forget the shot he hit on the second hole. We started on 10. Matt Saravallo, me and Jordan were paired together. And it was a par 3, about 200 yards, and Jordan hit this flighted, like, draw hook forearm to 3 feet, and I didn't know who he was. And I, after that shot, I was like, I don't even know how to do that. I was like, is this guy good? I never heard of him. And we finished around, I think he shot 67 or something, and I go to probably you on the putting green after, some other guys around. I was like, that guy blacked out. He's definitely not doing that tomorrow. I think he shot two less the following day and won by like 6.
Yeah. We played together in the final round.
There you go. And, okay.
And I mean, I was like a couple back or something going into the last round, but he came up and introduced himself on the range. He was actually really nice. I hate to give him credit. Like, he was very professional. It's actually weird, because I've never seen him do anything like that before. So I don't know what that situation was, but he came up and said, hey, and then we played that round, and yeah, it was he got me the first time that we played it quite handily.
and I would say a healthy junior golf rivalry began over the next 10 years. Mm-hmm. For you, how would you kind of describe y'all's relationship before y'all got into collegiate golf and just competing against one another, you know, trading blows at different events?
Yeah, it definitely was a rivalry, at least. I think when you're at that age, you're not mature enough to like grasp and understand maybe being happy for the person, but just handling it better, I'm mm-hmm. sure. It was one of those things that if he had a chance to win, like, I didn't really want him to win. If I'm being honest, and I'm sure he would say the same thing about me, but it was because it's like, you want to be the best of your age group. At that time, you know, it was graduation class, and it was like, you know, I wanted to be the best of the 2011 graduating class, and then especially, you know, throughout junior golf. And then, you know, he was getting into the amateur events when I wasn't getting into amateur events, or like he made the Walker Cup team when I was hoping to make the Walker Cup mm-hmm. team. So there was things that he was doing before I was doing and accomplishing.
That actually makes you jealous.
For sure, for sure. So, I mean, my freshman year winning, you know, the player of the year and winning freshman of the year over him was nice, although it was awful losing to him in singles of the match play, the finals against Texas, because, you know, there's a lot of matches and things that end up determining to where it wasn't the deciding factor, if you will. But I mean, we lost 3-2, so, and I lost to Jordan, so if I win that match, you know, we win a national championship that day. Mm-hmm. So there's a part of me that'll never forgive myself for that, but I got the better of him throughout the course of that season, at least.
Oh, and so let's go back to PGA Tour start. So one of your first ones was at the Wyndham Championship. Mm-hmm. We used to always play the FootJoy there. So it's a golf course, at least, that we were familiar with as juniors, that they just happened to play a PGA Tour event. I know Jordan also had a good event at the Byron Nelson. I remember all of his boys were out there watching him on the 18th. But I feel like that was a year or two later after you had played the Wyndham. Is that correct, that timeline?
What's that? The
When Jordan played the Byron Nelson versus when you played the Wyndham.
Yeah.
So like you had the first like big PGA Tour moment as a kid versus Jordan didn't.
For sure. I was 16. The winner of the FootJoy boys got into the Wyndham. So I won the FootJoy and I 16 years old, missed my first week of school, which was incredible, obviously. So I got to go play in a PGA Tour event as a 16-year-old, and on the Jordan topic, it is funny. I remember very vividly shot bogey free 65 the first round. I mean, you want to talk about blacking out? Like,
dude, you're 120 pounds and it's soaking wet.
Soaking wet.
That video that on the 18th hole they come back and show you in that orange shirt, black pants.
Yeah,
I mean. Just the tiniest human, but shooting 500 par in a PGA Tour.
My arms are, it's like you could just like full hula hoop through a Cheerio kind of thinness. But there was a weather delay, which there generally is there. So it was like I had to come back and finish the first round and then played some of the second round. But when I got done, I mean, I was in the top five, I think, or around the top 10, we'll call it, after the first day. And I will never forget being in the locker room. There's no way he remembers this, Jordan. But he calls me and he doesn't really do that now, but he definitely didn't do that then. So I was like, that's kind of weird. So pick up the phone. He's like, hey. He's like, did you shoot 65 in the Wyndham? It's like, what? He's like, did you shoot a bogey free 500 in the first round? And I was like, yeah. And he just hangs up. And I'm like. Like it was the most immature 16-year-old, like jealous of your, you know, it's just like, did you kiss that girl? It's like, yeah. It's like, what? It's just hung, I mean,
just speaks to y'all's like, y'all just wanted to beat each other.
I know.
And it's funny now because y'all are the best of friends and you want each other to be successful. Yeah. But it's classic because it just shows how competitive both of you are.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's no way that he remembers that, but I will never forget. Because I kind of like went home I told my parents or like told my friends and I was just like, I don't think Jordan's very happy for me right now. but we've grown up a little bit since 16-year-olds to where I would like to hope that, you know, the call that we get after our best round is a little different.
Oh my goodness. And I want to get into the class of 2011 because I think when you look at this class, whenever y'all's careers are done, and even going back to junior golf and what that class was able to accomplish, just the depth, the high-end talent. Did you feel like that class coming up when y'all got to college was going to be a class that potentially changed the way y'all would look at junior golfers coming up as golfers that could compete and win at an early age?
It's probably not fair to say yes. I think we knew how deep, you know, the class was and how, we just had a lot of really, really good players. And I mean, you know, we had a lot of really good players that didn't make it out of our class.
Pelucci's the first guy to come
to mind. Yeah, absolutely. But you look at a guy like a Denny McCarthy, you know, where it's like Jordan and I both played a junior Ryder Cup with him. And like, he was a very good junior player, but he was not a Jordan-like name, an Anthony Pelucci-type name.
I think another fair one would be Xander Schauffele.
Yeah.
He's a late bloomer.
Yeah. I love Xander to death. I'd never heard of him until, because I mean, obviously, San Diego.
I would see him State in the rankings. He would always kind of be in that 40 to 50, but like he's never somebody that like popped for us in junior and amateur golf.
Yeah. Yeah. And then just for where he went to college and us, like we never played San Diego State in college events. So it just was our paths never crossed. So it is. It's wild. And I mean, you know, you could. There's people like that all throughout, not just golf, but all sports. But it is, man. It was a deep, deep class, and it's
Boog,
cool.
Patrick Rodgers. Yeah. Who else is it? Emiliano Grillo?
Griot was a weird one because he didn't really go to like school.
Did he know what age he was?
He was, because there was a point.
What's your birth certificate?
There was a point where he was looking in Alabama, like he was going to go to Alabama.
Oh my gosh!
And I just remember because I would like talk to him on the phone about it, and like his English was not great back then. And I'm like, I got no idea what this guy's saying on the phone. And I'm like trying to, and I'm talking to coach. And in my head, I'm like, does this make any sense for Emiliano to go to like this kid from Argentina going to.
Dude, and then his buddy, Jorge Fernandez Valdez.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he's still playing, but he was as good as Emiliano at that same age.
For sure. But Emiliano was literally, I swear he was like a 2009 graduating class. And then the next year is 2010, and the next year is 2011, and I'm just so we claim them, obviously. Yeah, the 2011. But yeah, man, Ollie Schneiderjans,
yeah,
stud. There's
Rogers,
yeah, P. Rog. I mean, him and I, we roomed together in amateur events, you know, pretty much every single week. So yeah, there's a bunch of guys.
What about your college recruiting story? Because everybody associates you with the University of Alabama, which is such a shame. Go Tigers. But, you know, if it weren't for guys like Corey Whitsitt and Bobby Wyatt being at Alabama, do you think you would have ended up somewhere else? Were you definitely encouraged a little bit by going to play with guys as talented as them?
For sure. I think the most important thing for my college choice was I wanted to win a national championship, right? Like I wanted to be around guys that I felt like made me better. And, you know, was fortunate to take some visits to different schools to where I felt like I had that option throughout different schools. But I mean, just coach Sewell and Coach Limbaugh both were just like they made me feel so mm-hmm. comfortable. And I just loved, I just felt like they were the perfect dynamic of like a coach and assistant coach of energy, of vibe, of what they bring. I feel like they were kind of the full package when together. And you know, Coach Limbaugh would get in our and he would chew us out. Yeah,
I mean, I had the workouts.
Yeah, I forgot an umbrella one tournament, and that wasn't fun. I mean, we won the tournament, and I think I maybe won or like I finished up there, but it's like I forgot my umbrella and it was raining and I had to run some sprints and, you know, but it's little things like that that you look back and like it sucked when you're going through it, but I love that. I think that there was a mental side of that that really was good for us. Mm-hmm. And but yeah, man, the guys on the team, they just I loved being around them. We did everything together and they were, I mean, just being able to practice with Corey, with Bobby, with Trey, with Stroby. I mean, freaking Lebo, just listening to Lee out there.
Willie.
Yeah, of course, Willie. I mean, Tom was so talented. I mean, there's just so many guys that, like, everybody just wanted to, like, kind of compete, chipping mm-hmm. contest, punting contest, learn from each other. And so I think that was great.
If it wasn't Alabama, where would it have been, do you think? Did you ever see yourself at another school before, you know, Alabama was like, that's where I want to go?
I don't know. I've never in my life feel like I've been able to answer that question. I mean, I very heavily looked at LSU. I mean, I would have loved to be on a team with you. I think that would have been a lot of fun. But for the sake of going to Alabama, there's just no way in hell I'm going to say that it was LSU.
It's okay. One last question here with the amateur golf is making the Walker Cup team is such an accomplishment. It's something that any high-level amateur wants to try to play in at some point in their career. And you got to do it at home at National Golf Links, mm-hmm. Of course, with a couple of teammates as well, and a good team that I think they always try to compare Walker Cup teams to see which one was the best. And,
yeah.
And of course, you guys won that week. But what were some of your favorite stories from that Walker Cup?
Yeah, man, it was a lot of fun getting to play at National Golf Links. Like, that course is so, so cool. And, I mean, in September, it's just, like, peak Northeast golf weather. I mean, it was so fast and, like, it was in such good shape. And it was great. And obviously, you know, I think, you know, George W. Bush, like, he W. will come to – I think that pretty much the majority or all of the Walker Cups that are in the States.
W's the GOAT.
He is. So, I mean, we got to spend some time with him. And we had a blast, man. We did. I mean, we were fortunate to have, we had Bobby and Corey and I from Alabama's team were on there. Then we had Gavin Moynihan. He was on the GB&I team. He was coming in.
Was Jordan already?
Yeah, he had left.
He had already turned pro.
Yeah, okay, he left it. His team in the middle of the season. So he had already turned pro. I finished the season with my team. So just want to put that out there. That, noted. Yeah.
Quitter.
Yeah, make sure that doesn't get cut. Yeah, he quit on his team, but it's whatever. I definitely remind him of that. But no, man, and we had a great time. We there's definitely some stories roaming around of us, you know, sneaking / breaking into the windmill at National Golf Links, and those are true. We have some pictures.
What's it like in there?
Yeah, pretty old. Really old, actually. It was.
That seemed like a great place to take a couple beers in. And
you know, it was, Smiley. Okay. It was noted. Really, really sketchy in the middle of the night getting to the top of that thing. But
it's a crisp beer.
It is. Yeah, we found out that, and rightfully so, they weren't very happy about that. But man,
it's all right.
We were kids. It was. We were very happy.
Don't put a windmill in the middle of your golf course.
Yeah.
With a bunch of teenagers out there. Coming off a high.
Yeah, people were playing. The caddies are like, man, he's like, you got to watch out for that windmill. And all in my head is like, I want to go in that windmill. Like,
and take a couple beers.
Yeah, exactly. So we were fortunate to do so. Yeah.
Golly, that's so good. Any good George W. Bush stories from that week?
Oh, for sure. We had a great lunch with him, like one of the practice rounds, and then I think it's 10 guys on the team, so we would had lunch, and then he played two holes with five of the guys, and then two more holes with the other five. And the lunch was so great, and it was all assigned seating, and happened to be right across from W. And P. Raj was also he's sitting right next to him, and he asked. You know, it was kind of a free for all. Probably like a Q&A. It felt like for him probably wasn't as fun for him as it was for us. But and P. Raj asked him about his day on 9/11, and all of us were kind of like, I can't believe you just asked that. And he went through his day from when he woke up in the morning to when he went to bed at night. And
imagine you could have heard a pin drop.
It was insane. It was like 30 minutes, like from the. You know, when he was told, when he was in the school, you know, the picture that everybody's seen when he's kind of sitting there and he's got the Secret Service in mm-hmm. his ear. And I mean, I remember him saying of just the number one thing you can't do in that situation is panic, is because then you're the people that are around you are going to then get worked up and they are going to panic. Mm-hmm. And it's like staying calm and coming up with a plan is kind of the first thing I had to do. So, but to then, you know, late in, and I think he's told this story a million times too, but to the end of the night when he's, you know, in some bunker bedroom, probably in God knows where, that they thought that there was a plane that was flying, you know, to where they were, only to find out that it was their own plane that was like security and watching. And he was just like so exhausted. He essentially was like, I don't care. I just want to go to sleep. And then they were like, never mind, Mr. President, it's just our plane. And so that was wild. But selfishly for me, the coolest story was I was in the first group that played with him. And on the first hole, you know, we got a bazillion people on the green, around the green. And he hits his putt and just kind of happens to be I'm wherever I am, and he's walking around me to go up to his ball mm-hmm. to get to the hole. And as he's walking around, he just kind of casually says, he's like, you want to be on the front page tomorrow. And I was like, what? He goes, you want to be on the front page tomorrow? Sure. And he's like, come on. He's like, act like we're reading this putt. And he just kind of puts his arm around me and like kind of, you know, looks it, and I'm playing the part, and I look at it too, and then we're kind of laughing and keeps going. Sure enough, the next day, there's that picture on the front page of the paper. And I was like, damn, it's not the first time he's done that. And then coincidentally, however many days later, closing ceremonies were.
Can't believe, so he comes back.
He comes back for closing, which none of us knew.
Wow.
Closing ceremony, we're all in line in our, you know, button downs, ties, and I kind of get this tap on the shoulder as he's walking by and just goes, told you. And it was W. So that's a picture that was, it was cool. But, you know, he's the best, and he didn't need to do that. I just was very lucky that I happened to be the one that was standing there. But it was obviously a moment I didn't forget.
What an experience and what a memory. Can't wait to get back to National Golf Links. Maybe sneak into the windmill. I might have to do that. But
yeah.
So I swear we're going to get to some good stuff about Jordan in this interview. But one last thing I want to ask you about when it comes to y'all's rivalry was when you got to the PGA Tour. I think for the longest time, it had to be annoying, had to have been annoying with how great of a start that Jordan Spieth got off to in winning major championships, winning on the PGA Tour. And every time that you were shown on the broadcast, and I remember this when I was, I think I was probably still either in college or had been on the Korn Ferry Tour, and you were just Jordan Spieth's good friend.
Yeah.
And there would be other people that would say, it's like, just wait, like wait till he breaks out. But I imagine you had to be just so annoyed and pissed off and ready just to like prove everybody that like, no, I'm really good too. Just give me a chance. That had to have been frustrating.
It was. I mean, being where I am now and kind of understanding how everything works, like I get it, but also it's like, I mean, I didn't really have a rebuttal at the time. I mean, the dude was winning tournaments at some of the historic ages, winning majors at historic ages. And, you know, it was one of those things where it's like, yeah, I could be pissed off and I could not like it. But at the end of the day, like, I should go win some tournaments then. And I think it was kind of then of, I'm sure I probably started getting not snippy, but just over the questions and wanting to stop them. And it's also so long you can talk about the same thing. So I think for me, it was motivating of like, hey, like maybe I just try to be Justin Thomas and not be Jordan Spieth's best friend or Jordan Spieth's good buddy. And, I'm sure he got a kick out of it for a long time. And, I was happy that I was able to start winning some tournaments and start making a name for myself. Cause yeah, it definitely wore on me a little bit, but at the same time, we've talked about it before. I think both of us are better versions of ourselves when the other person's playing well. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, in 17, we had some unbelievable battles and we're both trying to win the FedEx Cup. We're both trying to be number one in the world. We're both trying to win tournaments and doing it. You know, it's when you look back at it, I think it's one of those things that we both are better when the other one is playing better.
And it's the same year in which you're trying to win your first major championship at Quail Hollow. And Jordan was out of the hunt. And you've told me this story about how you went to him before that final round, go to dinner and maybe just pick his brain a little bit. Just talk about just how comfortable you are to be able to go to somebody and just try to get some advice on how to get the job done.
For sure. It's something that it's situational in the sense of, you know, it's like, what's the line of like, all right, this person's out of the tournament now. Like I can, you know, like if he was like six back,
that's
I feel like, you know, six or seven's kind of the threshold of like, all right, I can't like ask this guy how to win a tournament because he's trying to win the same tournament. So, but he didn't have a chance, fortunately for me. Because after I finished my round Saturday and I was one of the last couple groups and it was basically dark when I left the course and wanted to go to Cowfish in Charlotte there.
It's a good spot.
And Jill was with me and his wife Annie. So,
by the way, that's changed now. Like now, for the most part, like you're not going out to dinner on a Saturday night at a major championship where like you have to deal with people. That in itself just is like, I can't imagine being at dinner and the guy who has a chance to win a major is like the table next to me.
In his golf clothes from that day, mind you. Yeah, I'm there in my white pants and my blue shirt that I wore on Saturday. Like it was late and I'm like, Jill's, do you want to go to dinner? Do you want to meet him? And I'm like, I don't really want to, but like I also need to eat and I love Cowfish and I'd rather have that than have room service. So, but I also selfishly wanted to talk to Jordan, about, I was trying to win my first major. I wanted to pick his brain a little bit. And I think, you know, just wanted to be with my friend and in the sense of like making the setting or situation as normal as possible. So yeah, we met them. We went straight from the golf course. I'm literally in my golf clothes from that day, probably like my player's badge. Like, I mean, it's probably 8:30 at night. Like they had ordered. So food was there when we got there and it was a quick dinner, but it was good just for me. Cause I asked him essentially, yeah, do you have any advice for me? Anything you tell me? And just to basically sometimes hearing what you probably already know, but from someone who's done it three times and not only three times, but he's won the previous major. He just won the Open Championship. Telling me to just be patient and just be myself. is probably something that helped me the next day without really knowing it.
Well, I appreciate you guys. You know, the one before one of my biggest rounds in my career in Miami, you know, I really needed to have a good Sunday before qualifying inside that top 50 to get into some major championships. And what do these guys do? They take me out to Nobu.
Yep.
We order way too many vodkas. And I lose credit card roulette.
Well, that, all on the that same part, night,
which was ridiculous.
Yeah.
The room key slip by Jordan Spieth and nixing the credit card roulette was an absolute travesty.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Appreciate that.
Yeah.
Played great, though.
Yeah. I was going to say, you were fake drinking, apparently. You, because that place gives me the heebie-jeebies normally, which we're going back to this year. So I got to get over that. But, yeah, I mean, you shot like 68 or 9 or something. You finished 7th?
I remember walking down the first fairway and thinking to myself, it was 12:36 tee time. I'll never forget. Walking down that first fairway and said, where am I? How did I get here? And how am I going to play Doral? Which is, by the way, the pucker factor at Doral is as high as any golf course in the world. And how am I going to find a way to get this thing done today? I did. It was great.
Played well. But I did not. Neither did Jordan, but so that was good. That was karma. You needed that because that Sunday earned you probably a couple $100,000, but that like $3,500 bill hurt way worse from dinner.
Because remember, like I just came off the Corn Ferry tour and I'd already won in the fall, but still, like, you haven't ever had big bills at that point. So like a $100 bill felt like a lot to me because I was just in college a year and a half before. But anyways,
how about 35 of them?
Yeah, there you go. It's just absolutely comical, and it reminds me a little bit of potentially one of the best performances in your career. And this isn't a major championship at Quail Hollow. It's not a major championship at Southern Hills. It's the WGC at Bridgestone in Akron. Yeah. And a lot of people say, "Yeah, I watched JT that week. He played really well. He was on point with his game." The week before, folks, we were in Ibiza for Jordan's bachelor party. And the fact that this man walked 72 holes without going down is a pure miracle. And the fact that he won the golf tournament convincingly is even more of a shock. We couldn't believe you even played. Talk about that performance.
There needs to be a 30 for 30 on that.
No, there does not.
Yeah. Okay. Fair. What if I told you? No. That, yeah, we'll joke about that some. Man, I feel like you're similar to me where it's like I get so much more excited celebrating my friends than I do me. And first off, like, how extra for Jordan to do his bachelor party in Ibiza? Like, who do you think you are? Whatever. But
it's happy to be there.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, no kidding. I did too. I loved it. But yeah, so we go straight from the Open, which was tough because he had just...
It was close.
He was in the final group he was leading and didn't play well. That was at Carnoustie.
I don't know. I was already there in Ibiza getting warmed up for y'all.
I just remember because I missed the cut. I played well Thursday, played terrible Friday. And then I just went full, since I missed the cut, full beach workout on the weekend. And I was just nothing but arms and abs, like thinking that I was just going to develop like this massive upper body in 2 days. Like, no, I'm going to be ready for the beach. I'm going to be ready for Ibiza, like for the 12 dudes that I'm going to hang out with for
100%, for 4 days. It was fun to meet Kaigo there for the first time.
Yeah, definitely.
What a
great
guy.
Four different times. But yeah, man, it was... we had a great time and we celebrated Jordan well and
we got back.
I mean, we got back Thursday. I mean, this kind of trip would put us out for what, 3 weeks now?
Yeah.
Maybe 3 to 4 weeks in the IR.
You take medical.
Yeah. I take a medical. I remember, this is so embarrassing. I remember I wanted to get an IV.
Mm-hmm.
Probably didn't work. You know, like thinking that that was going to bring me back. And, The nurse said you were too dehydrated, and I said I am well aware that is why I'm here. I would like an IV. Couldn't give me one, so I think I got like a vitamin B shot in the or something like that. And
go get
who knows what was in that thing. Honestly, maybe it was something else. But all of us kept joking that we were just going to grind out like this T33. we're going to play like a 4 p.m. practice round Tuesday. And I played literally like some of the best golf of my life that week. So yeah, that will very likely forever be the most impressive win of my career. And it's not even close.
We're going to keep the buzz going here, by the way. And we're going to have to take this conversation to a 10-year reunion of SB2K16 for probably like four years post that spring break. The amount of SB2Ks, whatever, that I would hear on the golf course was absurd. The t-shirts, it was insane. You know, we were golf influencers before it was a thing.
Yeah.
You know, we walked so these guys could run. So you're welcome, all these YouTubers.
That's a good point.
I mean, I know that thing came together in literally a perfect storm. We all needed that week so badly. But looking back at that time, looking at those videos, by the way, all these videos look like they're taken on a toaster.
Yeah.
You know, it just literally shows you like what type of iPhone that we had at the time. Just an incredible week and weeks, because we did the following year with our wives. We had a great time, but it was a little more fun than the year before. But still, Baker's is a good spot.
Water's wet, yeah.
I mean, just talk about how that thing came together and just what you remember.
Yeah, man. I can't believe that's 10 years ago, dude. That's crazy. Yeah, it was. It was great timing, but probably more so for you and Jordy after, you know, coming off Sunday at Augusta.
I don't know. Your Hilton Head round on, was it Saturday or Sunday? Was a little...
Was it after Hilton Head?
We did it after Hilton Head. Because I think you shot either 81 on Saturday or Sunday.
Yeah, I finished last. I do remember that. Yeah.
I think Ricky also like played poorly at Hilton Head. So we show up there just like, can't wait to put our clubs away, and then we played like 45 holes a day.
Yeah, that's a typical golf trip for us. I didn't know. I forgot that was after Hilton Head too, I guess. So maybe I definitely did need that then. That was a blast. It was just, you want to talk about not like having any responsibilities or worries. It was just kind of wake up like, all right, what do you want to do?
Would you go jump off a boat today?
Yeah.
Let's go do that.
Would you like a collect with your Fruity Pebbles? Would you like to go play golf? Would you like to go lobster dive? Whatever. So it was, it was epic. And then, I don't know
how many people have asked you, like, when are you guys going to go back to spring break, or are you going to do it again? And how annoying that is to be asked all the time.
Yeah, I think people have given up on us. I haven't gotten in a while.
I just tell them we're going to bed at 9.
Yeah, yeah, dude. Like that. It's same. Like I said, that trip would put me on the shelf for probably a week and a half or so.
But, well, we did one in Palmetto Bluff, and we brought all the kids, and we had a great time. And I can't wait to have more. Like, it's more fun now to like have these trips as a full family to like see all of our kids interact, because they're all around the same age, and pretty soon. I guess Sam, you'll be the oldest of the group. Pretty soon, he's going to be riding around playing golf with us. And,
I know.
And that'll be, Harris and Molly and Anna Carter. I'm sure they're going to be at the pool with all the girls. And pretty soon, that's what those trips are going
to
look like.
Can't wait to take our first boys trip with Sammy. Maybe some college visits, you know. Should we plant that one with Jordan? Or
it sounds amazing. Yeah. And I could not be more in. It's like, honey, we have to make sure he picks the correct school.
Yeah. And he needs an unbiased, he can't hear, listen to his dad. He needs your Uncle JT and Uncle Smiley, Uncle Rick there.
But you're supposed
to
be there to help figure out if this is the right golf school. Why are y'all going to frat parties?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I want to make sure it's okay for him.
We had to make sure if that was a bid he was going to take.
Yeah.
You know? It's like old school all over again.
Yeah, exactly. I'm in. I'm sold.
Oh, God. So the last part of this conversation I want to get into is, we talked a lot about your relationship with Jordan, but I think another relationship that most of us are all very familiar with is your relationship with Tiger. And I have to assume that relationship started with you moving down to Jupiter full time, kind of getting around some of the best players in the world around here. Was it seeing him on the road, but also seeing him at home and competing and playing with him? And when do you feel like he first took a liking to you? Because it's kind of hard to get in that inner circle of Tiger.
Yeah. I remember, like, honestly, a lot of great friends I have kind of started through Rick, to be honest. Rick was closer with him and we would just, you know, he'd go to dinner with him every so often. Mm-hmm. And he just asked if I could come one time, and like went to dinner a couple times, and, just remember kind of one time I was like, hey, you know, like get my number from Rick, we'll go play or do whatever. And that was just like trying to act cool. I'm like, yeah, no, for sure, dude. Yeah.
I'll shoot you text.
I'll page you. Yeah. I'll call you later. Make sure you get home safe.
Hey, Tyler. Good night.
Yeah, exactly. Good night. But I don't know. I've obviously was like starstruck, maybe isn't the right word, but was just kind of like in awe of him. But I mean, you know me, like it sometimes is like a flaw of mine is I feel like I act like the child that I am or sarcastic, like no matter who it is. And so I think he probably liked that. I mean, obviously there's a lot of things about him both then and now that I'm going to stop and listen or idolize, if you will. But like, if he says something dumb, like I'm going to say it just like I would to you. So I think he probably appreciated that. So yeah. And then we just, I mean, so many of us are down here and we, you know, play a lot of golf together and I was also not bashful of asking him questions.
Yeah,
I've always been that way with guys. I mean, I would ask Rory to play golf a lot when I first moved down here and just asked him stuff. And I wanted to get to a point when I did play with those guys in the biggest tournaments that I wasn't nervous to be around them. And feel like I could learn some stuff.
A couple years ago, when you were probably playing the worst golf of your career, and it wasn't even that bad, I think, for my standards, but I know what your standards are. Being able to go and talk to Tiger during that period, what was some advice that he gave you to try to help you kind of get out of that rut?
It's always to keep it simple. He always says that, just keep it simple, stupid. Just don't make things harder than they are, and that's something I think it's so easy to do in golf, and a lot of guys do it, and I've done it plenty of times, and unfortunately probably will do it more, hopefully less than I have, that, you know, I've been able to learn from in past. But yeah, just there was plenty of good that was in there, but I mean, you know, all of the best players, it's just how good is your bad.
Yeah.
It's how well
Scotty's done so well.
How well can you manage your bad days and your bad golf? And I mean, his confidence and belief in me is really reassuring and nice. You know, he's always told me you're good enough that you can go in 4 or 5 times a year without your best stuff. And that's, you know, whether he means it or not, like that's I appreciate that. And that means a lot for me to hear. So that's, you know, stuff that I reminded myself then, but it was definitely good to hear.
It's obviously, you know, playing for Tiger Woods as when he was the playing captain at Royal Melbourne, he told us a great story of just that 18th tee of Tiger just saying, just put the ball in play. When you ask like, hey, where do you want it? Just put it in play. But talk about how cool it was just playing with Tiger and just what type of captain he was, because there's tons of rumors going around that the PGA of America is targeting Tiger Woods, which I think is a good idea, by the way, for him to be the captain at the Ryder Cup at Adair Manor. Talk to him you know, just about what he was like as a captain and just playing for Tiger as a captain.
For sure. I think, the funny story that I just thought of when you said about captain, I mean, my first experience was him as a vice captain at Liberty, you know, and he was there, and you kind of have like your pods or whatever. And it's the captain, vice captain that's with your pod generally walks with the guys that are playing that match. And he happened to be, I think it was like, it was Brooks, DJ, Boog, and somebody else. I can't remember, but Boog, I think, and Brooks were going to play. So Tiger was out walking with them. And Boog, he like went to Strick or somebody. He's like, hey, he's like, can somebody else walk with us? It's like, well, he's like, I don't want Tiger to walk with us. It's like, what do you mean? He's like, he makes me too nervous. We're like, Book, he's on our team. Like, I can't hit shots in front of him. Like, he's standing right there. He's like, yeah, he's standing there to like it's not supposed to intimidate you. If it intimidates anybody, it's them. And he's like, I can't do it. I have to have somebody else. So we had to get a different vice captain to walk with Book because he was so nervous to play golf around him. Which
so good.
Is, I honestly respect the hell out of it that
he even said it out loud. Like, that would be an internal thing that would be buried inside.
Yeah,
my
like
gut.
I'd maybe like, hey, dude, I gotta tell you, like, I'm nervous. Like, no, he went to like Tiger, went to Strick, like every, and he's like, I can't do it. I can't play golf in front of him. And yeah, hey, power to him, I guess. But
just speaks of the aura of Tiger Woods and how we saw him as a kid growing up, man.
For sure, for sure. But then fast forward to then Melbourne, and he's our captain. And And yeah, you want to talk about it. I mean, any captain I've been fortunate to play for, you stop and you listen. But, you know, the way he went about things was just so cool. It was very, very short, very, very sweet. And, you know, we'd get together and at night and always in our team room and talk briefly. But it was very, very quick. And in the sense of he just kept iterating, like, guys, you all are unbelievable players. Like that year, Gary Woodland was a captain's pick. Mm. And he was like, our captain's pick just won the U.S. Open last year. Like, that's our captain's pick. Like, you guys are unbelievable golfers. Like, you don't need me to tell you anything how to play golf. And that was really cool. And he happened to be a playing captain. So him playing and getting to be fortunate enough to be partners with him was...
Yeah, I mean, how cool is that he's like, hey, JT, we're going to battle.
Yeah.
And walking the first seat, what's that like?
Man, it was so cool. Just it was the perfect storm for me because, you know, we went straight from the Bahamas. We went straight from the Bahamas for his event.
Yeah, it was because it was in
December. So, you know, the weeks leading up to that, we're practicing together, we're playing. I still have a shag bag of his balls in my garage from that because he just gets some of my golf balls, I get some of his, and mm-hmm. we would test him and try him and whatnot because he's got to be prepared for everything that he does. And but just walking, I remember walking to the first tee together. It's a long walk from where kind of everything was set up because they had kind of some of the holes rearranged. But and I'm like, what? It's like a couple minute walk. I'm like, what am I supposed to like say to Tiger in this situation? Like, I'm going to play a match with my idol and role model growing up, that, you know, I've been fortunate to become very good friends with. And I'm like, I didn't even know. And it just, but kind of thinking that to myself, I just, for some reason, just had the thought and basically just like put my arm around him or put it on his back. And I was like, dude, like, this is no BS aside. Like, this is, you know, the coolest thing ever for me, but like, show me that the player and the guy that I looked up to my whole career.
Yeah.
All those crazy, you know, the shots, the focus, everything. I was like, show me that guy out here today.
That's so cool.
And he just kind of like looked at me and he just gave me like a little smile, nodded.
Let's go to work.
And it's still to this day the best golf I've seen him play. Like, we've played a lot of golf, but
really
the control and the shots that he was hitting around there those two days we played.
Just the way shape shots, trajectory,
everything. It was the control, the focus, like it's so, so firm over there. And like how often, you know, he was able to hit it pin high and how using different.
He curves it, man.
Like, yeah.
You just don't see guys curve the golf ball quite like Tiger is able to curve the ball.
And over there, that's a big advantage. You know, you can use that to get close to pins mm-hmm. or just get it around them. It's not even a lot of shots. You can't get close to the hole, but it's, you know, like I think of a hole, it's like a short little par three. I think it was six maybe for us, but I think it's eight normally, but it's a coolest short little par three. And you kind of like hit this, you can either hit like a little one up the left or what. I mean, we would just hit these little like low cuts and he would just try to land it on the front with some just like side spin just to try to like get it to 25 yeah. feet. But and now it's a great shot over there. It's similar to like the Open Championship. Mm-hmm. And man, he was in such great control. Those two matches that we played together. And
if he was in that good control and y'all still had to make a putt out the 18th, that means y'all had a great match.
Yeah. 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 I mean, we look at it very differently. He looks at it as the only putt I asked him to read in 2 days was on 18 that I made, so naturally he takes the credit. And I say, well, first off, I made the putt. Second off, you don't go undefeated this week if I don't make that putt. So I'm still waiting for my thank you for yes. that, but I'm not going to hold my breath because it's been 7 years now and uh-huh. I still haven't gotten it. But
that celebration on the 18th, man, I love me some me.
Yeah.
I mean, did that just come out of nowhere, or were you thinking that halfway? It's like, I'm about to do it. It's here it comes. And then it's like, I'm going to do it.
Yeah, it was a little bit of both. Bud Cauley and I, we lived together at the time. We were
Bud. I forget this is Bud's.
Yes. Yeah. And actually him, Willie, and I, and we just, we somehow, I think we had like maybe seen T.O. At an Alabama game or something, but it was like, for some reason, a YouTube video, if you guys haven't seen it, you got to look, T.O., I love me some me, and it's literally montages of him just saying how much he loves himself and football games, but, and we just always said it, and it was funny, and I happened to show the guys on the team on the bus ride to the course that day, and none of them had seen it.
Okay, so the guys were aware. So Tiger, in that moment, was like, "That was a weird thing to say," but yeah, man.
He knew about it, and I said, "Man, if I make a big putt today or something, like I'm saying it." And of course, I wasn't thinking it beforehand, but it truly is. It's one of those things you just black out, and I just like looked at him, and then it just came out of my mouth, and the. Bud and Willie were texting that night. Like, did you really just say that? Or like, yeah, I've never had an opportunity to say that. So it was perfect. It couldn't have been drawn up any better.
Man, do you want to see Tiger as a captain?
I'd love to. Yeah. I think, like I said, he's
like a road game. It just feels like it fits him
for sure. For sure. And he's so busy and he's doing so much. So I think biggest thing for him is just to feel like he can give it his full attention and do it well. He's not going to do anything if he can't fully be into it and give it his full attention, because it's not fair. He would say it's not fair to us to the guys on the team, and it's not fair to him. So he's like, I think if he feels like he can do that, then I really do feel like he will. And I hope so. Cause
Yeah, he's wearing a lot of hats, being a part of the Future Competitions Committee, dealing with his own rehab, wanting to get back to playing, and then trying to give your full attention to being the Ryder Cup captain. As you know, it's a very, very busy job. We've seen it this past year with how busy Keegan was trying to handle both positions. And I want to ask this too, because, Tiger's been a good mentor to you. Do you feel, the same for you to his son, Charlie? And I still remember the first video you sent to our group text of little Charlie Woods' golf swing, and he may have been 8 or 9 years old, and I see his golf swing, and we both were like, how pure is this?
Yeah.
Like, kid just has this natural gift at such an early age, and all of a sudden he's matured, he's about to get to college, and it's like, how did we get here overnight? I imagine you kind of feel that way, as maybe feeling like a bit of a big brother to him.
I want to be if he wants me to be, kind of thing. Sure. I always was very lucky to have some people like that in my life, and I know how helpful it was. It's more of just a sounding board. I think, he obviously has his buddies and mm-hmm. just like I did, but when I was his age, like if I could ask my high school teammate, or like I could ask Ricky Fowler, like I'm pretty sure I'd rather ask Ricky Fowler. Like, no offense to my teammate, but Ricky knows a lot more and has been through more and is better than my teammate is. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I think I just want to help in any way I can. But yeah, man, he the shots that he can hit, a lot of guys on tour can't hit it, but he's very, very impressive. And always I'm hoping for the best for him, but yeah, man, he's grown up a lot. He's still a little punk, but not a total punk kid. He can beat me up, so I can't talk up.
All right, Charlie, get in over here, buddy. You couldn't get Charlie over to Alabama, man? Charlie Woods?
I tried.
You gotta work on your recruiting, man.
Well, I try to go buy the book. I guess I needed to open the checkbook or something now. But
yeah, in this day and age, right?
Yeah, I wanted what's best for him. Totally. And that's where we're at.
I know
up.
You do.
We're gonna get nice and comfy here. This is short sighted.
Hello.
This is really this
it
is
feels
really
short sighted.
Short sighted, yeah. Doesn't it? It's very intimate here. We're gonna do a little lightning round to close this thing out, JT. Okay. First place we're gonna start is seeing some videos of you. This is like 2019, swing the golf club left handed. We take nice. You over.
Oh,
to
it's
Panther
like you
National.
And Rick were like going, that's right. Y'all were like playing matches.
Oh, right? We did that COVID, yeah.
If we take you to Panther right now, what are you shooting left handed?
What tees am I playing?
You tell me.
I mean, I feel I'm playing like member T, like, you okay, know, 60, tees. 6,500, 6,800, whatever.
Whites.
I think I'm shooting. I mean, I'm hoping to break 100. I think I'm shooting in the 90s.
You think you shoot 90s?
That's I good. Do. Oh. Do you think higher or lower?
The whole thing is around the greens, because that's Like if it's
bunker shots.
Bunker shots, like flop shots.
Yeah.
Wind.
Wind, yes. All that.
A lot of water. Maybe I'm not breaking 100.
I was hoping you get a 6-7. That's really kind of been a theme on the show. Yeah, but yeah.
Not that cool.
Yeah. All right, next question for you is, you're a bit of a shoe guy.
Yes.
Give us like a manual or like a starter kit for like a lifestyle shoe, like a dress shoe, and a golf shoe. Like the JT starter kit there.
Jordan 1s are my start. Like I love Jordan 1s are so comfortable. I have a bunch of, I like the high tops, like with jeans and, you know, pants. I'm not quite the guy that'll wear them with shorts. I have before, but I mean, then you can go Jordan 1s with, or lows with shorts. So if I could choose one shoe just off to wear forever, I'm taking some Jordan 1s. Dress shoe. Oof. That's tough. I've been kind of forcing some loafers lately. I used to wear loafers, but like I got away from them because I love sneakers. But maybe it's the older, mature dad in me. You know,
that's right.
No, you're starting to be cultured, South Florida culture.
Yeah, exactly.
Just getting the guy some sweater vests.
Yeah, yeah. Wear some wool pants. Yeah, I got a couple pair of like, you know, some Ferragamo loafers. So yeah, some kind of loafer depending on the outfit. I mean, golf shoe. I feel like I've been a wingtip guy for a long time, so it's stick with the dressy style.
Hey, you've gone the big dad golf shoe too,
yeah.
Which I too that I like them.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
More comfortable, I think.
Yeah, they definitely are. I wore them all probably the last year and a half or something, but I'm back.
Back to the wingtip.
Yeah, I just it's. It's me.
It just tailors the outfit.
It does. A little touch. Just a little bit. Yeah. Yep.
So on the topic of style, I got a picture here I want to show you.
Oh, my God.
And we're taking it back. We'll show this. We'll put this up on the broadcast. Smiley can see it over here.
I'm on the left.
That's an important clarification.
Yeah.
So meeting Trent Richardson here, I want you to walk us through putting this outfit together. We've got an Alabama hat. We've got a white button down that's tucked in and what looks like some acid wash.
You look like a pledge, man.
Yeah. A belt is holding up my life. Those jeans would be on around my ankles, it looks like, if it was not. This is definitely after a football game. Like that is the most tailgate football. I'm very much of like kind of dressing to where I'm going, you know, like I have no issue blending in. And I mean, University of Alabama football game, like fratty, I probably had some loafers on, like frattier the better. And always a hat guy, especially if it was a day game, which that was not in the day. So it probably was, that was outside of Hungry Howie's at about 2 a.m.
Great garlic crust, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, that's Trent Richardson. My buddy's like, you should get a picture. I was like, I don't think I should. He's like, I think you should get a picture. I'm like, okay, let's get a picture.
There we go.
I'm sure he remembers that.
So, and then on the topic of that, all right, I want you to put together perfect Alabama game day for me. Like, you land in Tuscaloosa, start to finish.
Great question.
What's a perfect Alabama game day look like?
I'm getting in that day.
Just landed.
All right.
Maybe like midday. It's like a late kickoff.
It's my day. So you're asking me the kickoff time when I land, but now I'm landing midday and it's a late game. Okay, this is a fun game here, Charlie. Thanks. I'm going like a. I don't think I'm going night game. The night games are awesome, but I'm going like afternoon game. I'm probably going like.
So what time are you landing then? Let's start there. 5 in the morning.
Yeah. Time Santa's free up. I'll go with afternoon game. What, like 4:30 or something like that. Probably land like 11. 10:30, 11, go straight to Innisfree. Just Irish, no breakfast, zero breakfast, because I'm eating all of the Irish Gold chicken fingers you can imagine. Wow. Probably going to dabble in a couple Coors Lights.
Sure.
Well said.
Then, make my way down to, you know, toward the stadium, go to Gillette's, got to get a Yellowhammer there, you know, check out the game day scene. Then, yeah, going to the stadium. This is I'm going Saban days, so nothing against DeBoer, but I Saban's pregame speeches were the best. So I'm going go down the field a little bit, probably, you know, dodge a punt here or there on the sidelines. Go down. You asked for this, so I'm going through it.
I love it.
Then yeah, go in the locker room, listen to the spiels from all the coaches and the players. Listen to coach do his thing, and then yeah, watch the team go out.
I thought you were leading the team out. This is like a perfect. Yeah. Is this now a perfect day?
No, in a perfect day, I'm not leading the team. I don't really want that because I'll probably trip. They'll pass me very quickly.
Get that helmet on. You're just little giants out there.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So I think that's and then
Hungry Howie's late night.
I don't know. I think if Hungry Howie's is good, but I'm not sure. I think. Yeah, I mean, chicken fingers are just too
much. Just go back to chicken fingers.
Yeah, go back to chicken fingers. Maybe get some cane somehow.
There you go.
I love it. That sounds like a fantastic
game. It does, man.
We're going to roll it back now to you guys were talking Walker Cup, windmills, things of that nature. What is your medal podium of Walker Cup venues? Because we just came from Cyprus. We're not far from Seminole. We were over at St. Andrews. You played at National Golf Links of America. What's bronze, silver, gold Walker Cup venues?
It's a Hinch this year.
Yeah. Dude, I think you gotta go. I think you have to say St. Andrews, I think, is gold. I think St. Andrews I would love if some, I just don't see how it's physically possible, but somehow, some way for a Ryder Cup, like at St. Andrews Ryder Cup would just be.
Wow, that would rip.
Like, there's no way it could happen.
Just put that in the air.
No way it could happen, but could you just imagine, you know, like how sick that would be and like matches somehow coming down to the road hole and coming down to 18. Like it just would be epic. Like so epic. So I'm going St. Andrews. I'm probably gonna say Cyprus.
That was silver, fun to watch.
I mean it's
the just drone the, coverage of that place this year was just stupid.
Just so beautiful. Never gets old. And the golf course I think is really, really fun and good. And this is tough for. I think I'm going. I'm gonna be biased. I'm gonna go National Golf Links because I was there. And I think a factor you have to add in there is your Walker Cup experience. Like the golf courses I can play around it. Like I'm probably gonna play Shinnecock, go play Sabonic, go play Southampton. I mean Friars Head. But like all those, there's a lot of good options. So that's.
You might be able to do a little action around the U.S. Open this summer. A couple of those around Shinnecock.
I may not be the national may not want me back after that, but
they need to put a plaque in the windmill.
Maybe not. I don't know. Little spot where Corey Whitsett just threw up right outside of it. That'd be perfect.
Shout out, Corey. Father of two.
All right. Next one is a little bit of a double feature here because you know the show's got Smiley's name on it, so we got to get some Smiley stories in. I want to hear the best and the worst shot you've ever seen Smiley hit. And this does not need to be confined to professional golf. This can be like buzzing the tower on the Ireland trip. Just best and worst Smiley shots you've ever seen hit. I like where this is starting.
The worst shot I've seen Smiley hit that – I'm sorry. I probably tell every person I play Panther National with is he hit it in the pond. On number 8, he hit it in this pond that's in front of the tee on 9 and 18.
Oh yeah.
It's hard to describe, but he did it. He did it.
What was the shot tracer on this? Was it
it not only had the right blinker on, it actually started going backwards.
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking of 11 that day. It was windy. Like it was properly windy.
He was playing so bad.
But he had a hard time with the left right wind that day.
You don't say.
The one on 11 was it? You were the caddy. Was like, was that a bird? And you're like that was your ball. That was it. Just, but then he hit the sickest 3-wood, and then the sickest 3-wood onto the green, and it was. But I'm going with
shocking.
Right? I'm gonna go with
that. I've seen it.
I'm gonna go with that. I think it was like a 6-iron or something on number 8. That one, I'm sorry, was the worst. The best. Do you have any that come that?
What comes to mind for me is probably any swing I made that day at Oakmont on our practice trip.
I just remember putting. You made a lot of putts that day.
Yeah. There's. I've hooped a lot when we've played together.
Yeah. Well, you and I played
together at the Shark Shootout too.
Mm.
Surely we've had some good swings there too, right?
Yeah. That 7-footer you made for our scramble bogey was a great putt.
Okay, there it is. I dripped it in. I was like, I've got to find a way to make this hole as big as possible. We cannot make a double in this format.
Toe double cross snipe in the water. This is a scramble format. These are two players on the PGA Tour, and
we're playing with Lexi and Bryson.
Yeah. Just getting our tails kicked. Faces kicked in. And Bryson's also side saddling, so it's just adding insult to injury.
Was he?
He was.
He was giving it that
he was,
old deal.
He was, yeah.
Lexi's out driving me.
Yeah. So then Smiley has to bail out, and he bailed out. He hit it right in the
fescue
native area stuff. Then I think Smiley hit it in the water. Then I bailed out. I remember we hit our third from right of the cart path. Water goes up by the green. I remember I hit a sick chip. Like Smiley hit a pretty good chip to like 30 feet. I hit a sick chip to probably like 8-9 feet, but this hole is on a massive downslope. I hit it 15 feet past. Mm. Smiley just missed probably like 8 feet past. So we had an 8-footer for bogey and a scramble. I missed. And then Smiley hooped for a bogey for our scramble.
Well done.
Putt partner.
Yeah. I'll never forget that scorecard or the scoreboard when we got to like 13. There was no scoring out there. So we're thinking, all right, we're going to get hot. We're going to get into this thing. And I think we're like 4 or 5 under through like 12 holes. And we get to 13. And I think I'll never forget, like, Steve Stricker's on like 17 and they're like 18 under. And I was like, is that. That's wrong, right? We can't be 13 back right now.
We're last by a couple, right?
Top five, though.
Yeah, we did.
Still got a top five.
Yeah, we did. We got hot. We got hot.
Again, off of a Baker strip.
Yeah. I was going to say the other shot that comes to mind for you is that par five at Baker's on a spring break trip. I think it's number 1, 2, 3.
Par five?
Five. Yes.
The hole out?
Yes. He
cannonball.
Hits it.
Cannonball in the water.
He holes out for eagle and neck, but it was like one of the, you know, there's like music going, so you can't like hear.
14
and all
hammers.
Of a sudden, like, he makes it for who knows how much. And then, like, you turn around and Smiley is just like this mid cannonball into a lake, into a pond that is right there. Like, glove is on. Like, it just was full. He made it, immediately turned around, cannonball into the lake. And
was there like a wildlife situation? Like, do they have gators in Baker's Bay?
No,
or is it all,
not as bad as, as when it was when my brother down at the Jingle Bell.
Yeah.
He swam across the lake.
Snake Lake?
No, it was. But later we found a sign the next day that said, beware of alligator.
Mm.
Like, we had no idea.
Knowing luck, he would have done it anyway.
Yeah, Kaufmans aren't scared to hole out and jump in the lake.
Real shame they're shutting down the Jingle Ball last year this year.
First and last,
The final two I got for you, JT, are we got to take it back to the beginning of this interview, being a dad. But we're going to start with being a son. We had Cam Young on the show. We asked him, his dad, of course, being a pro, the swing tip his dad gave him as a kid that he most hated to hear. Thinking of the tips Mike gave you, what's the one that you resisted the most when you were a kid?
I don't remember anything specific. I remember, as a kid, you last thing you want to do is hear anything that your dad says. So it probably was everything.
That's fair.
I do. While you have, sorry to interrupt you, I have a great Cam Young story.
Please,
from Ryder Cup. Was so excited to play with Cam Young. So, word was kind of getting around, like, you know, president's going to come. Is he going to come morning, afternoon, whatever? And it was like, he's coming for the afternoon. So he's going to be in the first tee for the afternoon sessions. Like, that's awesome. And so we get out there, we're walking, I'm walking side by side with Cam. You look over and like, it's President Trump. He's got, you know, a big, glass cover up there. And he's kind of, you know, I think he walked out with Bryson but there, kind of give him a wave, whatever. And so we go, we play, and we're on like five or something. And somehow, I don't know how it was brought up in conversation, but Cam was like, did Trump end up coming? And I was like, what? He's like, yeah. He's like, did President Trump end up coming? I was like, he was on the first tee. I was like, we waved him. And he goes, I completely blacked out. He's like, I don't remember anything from walking to that first tee or the first tee. And I lost it.
The way
it.
He played, too.
I know. I know. I was like, there. You know what? So you good. Just keep going, partner. So it was that was funny.
That's so good. The last one we're going to ask, of course, is your father to Molly. Favorite current activity to do with Molly right now?
She loves swings, but she loves water, like a pool, beach. Love like it. We went to the Bahamas last week, just a little family trip right before kind of going back to work. And like she would get so hyped at like she just kind of sit her right there on the beach and like the waves are small, and you know it's like the open handed point. It's like it's just. Like a wave would come and she'd just freak out and, you know, look at it's like, yeah,
we're adding that to the soundboard.
That's right. It's gonna be a sound effect. Yeah.
It's the only thing I've ever experienced in life where like all the cliches are so true. And it's just fun to watch her just grow up, be a little human.
It is the best.
You got a little fly on top.
You got a fly on top. There he goes. We avoided some of the wildlife, but not all of it.
I think the fly was ready to wrap. There it is. I hope all you guys enjoyed this conversation as much as I enjoyed being a part of it. JT, you are our first guest ever on this show, and this may have been our favorite interview.
And also, we forgot to mention the new record holder for most appearances. Good. Now takes the lead over James Nitties. He's at four now. He's
wow.
At four.
James Nitties is so much cooler than I am.
Well, we're super appreciative of your time, and we're looking forward to seeing you back on the golf course. I know you're excited.
Yeah, no, thank you. It's shaking off some rust. You know, it's been almost 6 months since competition, but man, I'm excited. You know, it'll just I just miss competing and seeing all the guys. So be good to see y'all more too.
That's right, JT. No. Thank you, buddy.
This has been the Smiley Show.
You know, I listen to this podcast. It's really cool. And
all of our first lovely time. Fans and subscribers, but make sure you like and subscribe.
It's cool to see what you guys are doing. I know golf fans appreciate it, but we do too. So please keep it up.
For all the good people of YouTube, like and subscribe.
You guys have some good takes. So I'm happy to come on and shoot the...